We're talking about Christmas tree selection, and nothing is fresher than going and cutting your own. Have y'all ever done that, Jay?
We used to do that all the time when the kids were little. The hint I would recommend there, because I've made this every time I did it, I made this mistake. Take a tape measure with you. They look so much smaller out there in the forest than when you get them home. It's like, oh, holy cow, what was I thinking?
And you have to have a permit to do that as well.
Those get
drawn in August or something.
Yeah, pretty early.
You have to be thinking ahead.
You got to think ahead. That's right.
We actually tried to get someone from the Forest Service on, but we did not get a return call. What I found on their website, there are still Coronado National Forest still has permits available.
Oh, wow.
Tonto National Forest.
Wow. Seriously, close to town, you can still do it. Oh, wow. And they also have designated areas, too. I think they give you a map, so you can't just go anywhere in the Tonto National Forest. There are selected areas that they'll let you cut the tree. But you talk about a tree that will last forever. One you've cut yourself and taken home and put right up, those just seem to never dry out.
And your time from cut down to water, especially if you're going as close as Tonto, could be 2 hours. And where you're talking, these other ones, they're coming from Oregon. They could have been sitting on the ground a couple days and then on the truck for another 12 out to 18 hours and on the lot. And
it used to be a thing where you would buy a potted Christmas tree and then plant it. Is that still a thing? Or
there are still around. It's not near as popular because, quite frankly, people are not landscaping with pine trees as much as they used to.
Which is not a bad thing, right?
Well, you know, it depends on what part of town you're in. If you're living, in a horse property or a irrigated lot or a property with lots of turf or, you know, that's more of an agricultural setting, then they're fine. And some of the pines are actually more drought tolerant than people think. These pines that we grow here are coming from, you know, pretty arid regions, usually someplace like Afghanistan or, you know, the old Aleppo pine is named after a city that's become quite famous here for not great reasons lately in Syria. So
About a lot of shade.
They can get big. And that's the other thing is that, you know, as lots have gotten smaller, the types of trees people plant tend to have gotten smaller. I think it's more of the look that we just don't landscape with the look of a pine evergreen look anymore. Things are, you know, flowering, drought-tolerant type shrubs. It's just a whole different look and concept of landscaping than what pines kind of offer in the look of the landscape.
You had mentioned earlier it's pretty close to some lettuce harvesting time if you got your vegetable garden in early. Is it too late to plant anything?
Absolutely not. We can still plant all of the winter type vegetables. So the leafy things and the root crops, can all be planted, you know, for another couple of months. That's the nice thing about our winter vegetable crops, and is you can have multiple crops. You can plant a row of something and then wait a few weeks and plant another one so that when you're harvesting, you have another one coming on. Of course, it depends on the space you have, I understand. But you have a great opportunity to keep planting just almost year-round here. And through the winter months, it's really nice that you can have multiple crops of the same type of thing just coming on all the time.
Now, we're probably still a few weeks away from it, but if you wait to buy frost cloth till after the first frost. There's usually no frost cloth in any available in any stores.
Very good. Very good tip. If you don't have any and you have some things that will need to be covered, and those plants are, we mentioned earlier in the broadcast, hibiscus certainly is something that has to be covered. Bougainvilleas, if you want to, although it generally doesn't do them that much harm to get frosted back. Natal plum. I'd like to cover the things that are kind of slow growing and damage easily. So hibiscus, the dwarf natal plum, like the boxwood beauty, sometimes, you know, because it's a little slower growing, if you have to prune it back, it doesn't respond as quickly. You'll see ficus trees getting covered, kind of the opposite thing. They've gotten big and they've gotten to where we want them. It's kind of a shame if they freeze back too hard, although it's got to get pretty cold to damage them severely. If you wait until, the 11th hour, it gets hard to find.
And when you're draping it over a tree, a lot of times you see it bunched and tied back at the trunk, which, you know, I know the thought process there. They're trying to protect all the leaves. But that's incorrect, if I remember correctly.
Well, I don't think it would hurt anything, and certainly you want to keep it from blowing off, because that's invariably what happens to folks. And the coldest part of the day is early morning, you know, right as sunrise comes up. So you put it on at night, it's great, and then we get some breezes through the night, and it blows off. So if that's your best way to anchor it, that's fine. You know, it probably is better if it's like a tent where the tails or the ends kind of flare out a little bit, and they're actually tied to the ground. But, you know, anything that you cover is going to be better than nothing at all. And if worst case scenario, if all you can cover is the trunk, wrap the trunks. If the foliage or the young small limbs of something freeze, you know, it's not catastrophic, especially if it's a fast-growing plant. Those will grow back pretty quickly. But if you get damage to the main trunk or main limbs of a tree and have to cut it clear down to the ground or slightly above, then in essence you really don't even have a tree anymore. You have a big bush.
1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you. If you'd like to talk with Mr. Harper, you can text questions to 411-923 or email info@rosieonthehouse.com. Greg's in Scottsdale, and he wants to talk about his Bermuda grass lawn. Good morning, Greg, and welcome to the program.
Morning, guys. Hey, Jay. I have a Bermuda grass lawn, and I'm contemplating putting in like a vegetable bed parallel to our fence back there, you know, a couple feet wide running the length of the fence. I guess my question is, what's the best way to go about creating a barrier? I'm not so much worried about the initial installation, but long-term, keeping the Bermuda grass from invading the bed, how deep do I need to create a barrier for to keep that grass from invading? Got any tips on best way to accomplish this?
So is this bed going to be raised, or is it basically going to be ground level?
Yeah, probably not so much raised.
Okay.
Maybe a brick or two, but not...
Okay, right. Okay, so is there grass, Bermuda grass, growing in this area now?
Correct, yes.
Okay, what have you done to... What are you going to do to get rid of that now?
Well, I'll definitely be digging it out and digging it down. I may put a barrier in between, you know, below, kind of vertically there. I've heard some people say actually that carpet works well, old carpet scraps or kind of line that layer.
There's two thoughts here. You know, you're going to have one camp that's going to freak out when I tell you to use Roundup, but it works great. It will kill the Bermuda grass, although as it's getting colder, it's going to be harder to do because it has to be actively growing, for it to work. But it is very effective on eradicating Bermuda grass, and Bermuda grass is very, very hard to kill by digging it out. In fact, I would almost say it's almost impossible to completely get rid of it that way. But you can dig it out, and then you can do a lot of layering. You're right. They'll put multiple layers. Now, remember, the water's got to be able to go through it, or you're going to have a mess, you know, if you don't have water drainage. So layers of carpet, newspaper, anything that's going to let water go through it will help some. And then you'll just have to watch as down the road, Bermuda grass. I would even use probably some weed fabric, although it's not perfect for, you know, allowing Bermuda grass to come back through. It's better than nothing at all. So, you know, maybe multiple layers, with that fabric being the last layer before you put your soil on top of it. And then I'd run the fabric up the sides, since you're digging it down, run it right on up the sides as high as your brick edging is going to be. And that will help some. And then, of course, keeping the lawn well edged will keep it from creeping in that way. You can make sure your edger runs deep along the edging, cutting the rhizomes and the runners and that sort of thing. Keep it from spreading that way as much as you can.
Bermuda grass is kind of like the cockroach of the plant world. There's just nothing you can ever seem to do to completely kill it all.
Well, unless, you know, you get people that can't get it to grow. You know, I mean, I don't know. You know, we have lots of people that have problems getting it to grow where you want to grow, and then it grows where you don't want it to grow. It can be a little bit that way.
Well, good luck, Greg. And as Jay had said, if you're going to use a chemical to kill it, you know, what we generally recommend people to do is, if they're trying to convert from a lawn to a xeriscape, is do it in the summertime when it's watering, growing, and it's absorbing moisture. Because when that chemical hits it, it'll go to the roots. When it's dormant right now, you might as well just dig down 2 feet and then backfill it with fresh soil.
And then be prepared for it to come back, because even digging down 2 feet, you're probably not going to get it all. So
maybe this conversation will convince him how great Ray's gardening is.
There you go. We appreciate the call. We have just a few more. We have one more segment coming up. If you'd like to get on the line, you can at 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you. You can text in to 411-923 or email info@rosieonthehouse.com. Let's see if we can squeeze Chad in before the break on a question with his mesquite tree. Welcome to the program, Chad.
Yeah.
Chad? All right. Well, we'll put him on hold. We'll try that again a little bit later. Sometimes from remote, it's takes a little while for all the connections.
Well, he may be still talking to Stephanie.
All right. We'll be back. It's Rosie on the House every Saturday morning.